Mini episode 980 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to mini episode number 980 of the FDH Lounge. This is a very special occasion, one of my favorite shows to do every year. And most years, it ends up involving three original FDH Lounge dignitaries, as it does this year. Myself, Jason Jones, Chris Galloway, here to talk NFL Draft. One of the great rites of springtime in America, ladies and gentlemen, when the FDH Lounge is convening three original FDH Lounge dignitaries to talk NFL Draft. So this is our preview show. We've already gotten into a little bit on the molecular level of some of the players. Myself and Jason, with his excellent new Gridiron and Hardwood site, we were co-producing some NFL Draft Combine coverage. Of course, that was FDH Lounge mini episodes number 975 to 977. That's where you could catch that on this end. So we've gotten into a little bit of the micro level of the players. We've already kind of covered that. So I'm not going to ask as much in the way of questions along those lines, although again, these guys are free to go wherever they want to go and talking about the subject matter. So this is something that, again, we've all been looking forward to doing this show. And Jason, I know how much it pained you. You missed the one last year, but back this year, good to have you in the mix, my man.
Yeah, can't wait. This one's been a little different, I'll be honest. We all come from a similar perspective, and it's starting to feel like the 2016 presidential campaign where people want to eat each other. But we'll see how it unfolds.
I actually do have a point of comparison about something I see John Dorsey doing that, if he's using strategy in a way, appears to be somewhat kind of Trumpian, if you can call it that. So it's funny you went there, because I'm going to address that subsequently. And, of course, on that note, one of our premier political gurus in the FDH Lounge, my man, Chris Galloway. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, and I think the only way that this could get better is if John Dorsey literally just started tweeting day and night about the draft, the NFL, and just calling out other coaches and organizations left and right. the failing Detroit Lions want to trade with us. So sad. You know, that would be epic stuff.
That would be amazing. My fear is you could see something like that before Thursday on the trajectory that John Dorsey's on, but we'll get to that a little bit later. Of course, this show is always something that we put together. It is always the capstone of our draft guide for every year. 2018 Pro Football Draftology, of course, we'll have a link to this show on the cover of it, as we always do, and as I indicated, a draft guide that is always co-produced by the FDH Lounge, FantasyDraftHelp.com, Sportsology, and for the first time, Gridiron and Hardwood. And here are some things that are in the guide for this year, just before we get started here to let you know. Of course, our man Jason Jones, FDH senior editor, as always, his position-by-position rankings and his top 200 overall. I think this is the first time we've gone down to 200 on that, so something to look forward to there. Prospect video links. You want to see these guys playing. You want to see what they look like in their form. You might want to turn your sound down when you do that, though, because everybody's a wannabe DJ that puts these things together, and you get some god-awful rap music on there. So advice in advance, folks, turn down your sound when you're watching the highlight films, because that part of it's kind of douchey. But we have the links for you. We have mock drafts.
You know, Rick, since you...
yeah.
Real quick, just as you mentioned that, you don't always have access to coaches' table, whatever you want, whoever you want. And I have actually found that there's a really decent one out there, a decent group that does highlights that is nice enough. They have a little intro, but once the footage starts, the music stops, and it's the most gracious thing I've ever seen. But that's for another time.
Awesome. awesome, because everybody's a wannabe mixtape guy out there, and it just really, it's one of many things apparently that chaps me these days, so I'm glad to hear about that from you. Of course, yours and my mock drafts, Jason, are in the guide as per always, and our play-along game from my longtime close personal friend Bob Benick, FDH Lounge contributor, a fun little strategy game. You want to play along? You want to outguess your friends on draft day? We have a game for you that's in there, as we always do. Early 2018 predictions, and then also our UQB stat being unveiled for the first time for 2018, and of course that is our ultimate quantitative baseline from fantasy football, the best players at each position last year based on the ultimate quantitative baseline at each position. We are unveiling that now, as well as I hinted this to you guys off air, this was my little Manhattan project. For the first time in any sport, we have the FDH UQB team stat, ultimate quantitative baseline for the 2017 season. Here's what we averaged together. Of course, there is the final FDH Lounge power rankings for 2017 that we do. We go 1 through 32. So off of that, we have created, and we've had the last couple of years, an impressiveness of victories index. So it's 50%. How did you do on the field, wins and losses, 50%? How impressive was that in terms of the schedule that you are up against? The ranking for this is averaged against several other rankings. They are offensive yards gained, defensive yards allowed, DVOA, offensive DVOA, defensive DVOA, special teams DVOA. So all of these are basically put in a blender, and it spits out one number for you. So here's the top 10 teams in the NFL for the 2017 season based on our ultimate quantitative baseline. Number 10 is Dallas. Number 8 is actually a tie between Atlanta and Jacksonville. Number 7, yes, number 7 is New England. Number 6, Carolina. These are all fairly bunched up at this point, but it's still noteworthy. Number 6, Carolina. Number 5, the Super Bowl champion, Philadelphia Eagles. Just ahead of them, number 4, Pittsburgh. Number 3, the Los Angeles Rams. Number 2, New Orleans. And number 1, the Minnesota Vikings, who, Chris, I know you predicted to win the NFC North last year, make the playoffs. So they didn't win the Super Bowl, but they were the number 1 team last year in the league on our ultimate quantitative baseline. So, Chris, you can take a bow for that one, certainly.
Well, I thank you. As you know, I do love bows. I think you have the top 10. We can get in there and argue about the rankings and where they might actually grade out on some other scaling. I think you certainly captured the top 10 teams in the league. Without arguing the specifics on actual spot. So from that standpoint, I won't pass judgment on your blender process.
Well, you might pass a little judgment when I tell you this, though. Although, again, keep in mind that even if it was lies, damned lies, and statistics, as I think it was, the Browns' defense actually graded out fairly well last year. The Browns were only 30th in this index, despite not winning a game. Indianapolis 31, the New York Giants 32. So, again, it's bunched up, but are you ready to second-guess me a little more when I tell you that?
No, I'm not, actually, because you and I have had many conversations. That team, despite the horrific quarterback play, has a lot more talent than they get credit for that's on the roster right now, or even before the free agency. I don't think the Browns were actually the worst team in the league last year. Just from a talent standpoint, I think we had a dreadful coaching job by the head man.
Yes.
That kept them from winning a few games that they should have, Indianapolis being one of them. And so therefore, there's the possibility of that team being able to make some big leaps, especially when you look at the defense. I mean, I think even on other metrics, the defense ranked, last year I think rated out somewhere in the teens.
Yes.
Despite struggling in the secondary mightily. So there's the potential that defense could make a jump into the top 10 this year, realistically. I actually don't take any umbrage with the 30th place for the Browns.
And that's pretty much what I thought you would say, but I just wanted to check. Jason, your thoughts on this new metric that we have?
Well, first thing, to the coaching dig there, I think the crickets that you hear is anyone waiting to contradict that idea. And I don't think they're going to get it. But no, look, the cool thing about the metric is it takes everything and then combines it all and weighs everything more or less equally. So you get one basic idea. And I don't think anyone really, I mean, like Chris said, we can go back and forth on the order of things. But if we're just looking at the statistical numbers, I'm not shocked at all that it played out the way it did. I mean, even a New England-Philadelphia Super Bowl wasn't shocking when you consider they're in that discussion, and they just, you know, found ways to make plays. It's not like they had a conventional, typical, you know, drive and approach. It was a little different, and it worked out that way. But what I'll be interested to see is how this looks, you know, this time next year when you take a team that was number one that you think would grow on that since they're getting their rookie star running back. And they got rid of their journeyman quarterback, who's next year in Denver, which I'm not happy about. And hopefully, I don't know, I don't think he's worth the money, but, you know, they feel happy about Kirk Cousins. So, you know, they hold that spot or they absolutely don't. But I believe in the math, so I'll take it at face value.
Yeah, and I think, again, it will be very fascinating to see how it plays out and how teams go up or down from there. For New England, if I'm just spitballing it here from memory, the fact that their defensive numbers were so fugly last year, that's what put them number seven. The defensive DVOA certainly pulled them down. The defensive yards, that part of it, again, they were not a perfectly balanced team, at least statistically, and this is nothing if not a statistical index right here. Also, New England and Philadelphia, unlike some of the other teams in the playoffs, strength of schedule lagged a little bit. New Orleans being second, strength of schedule had an awful lot to do with that. There is no more brutal barbed wire cage match in pro sports I can think of off the top of my head than the NFC South these days. So you come out of there and you've really accomplished something. So it will be very interesting to see how this tracks for this year. As we head into the draft, again, I'm going to keep it kind of open-ended here at the outset. I'll start with you, Chris. Obviously, the biggest story, as Jason and I have talked about in our previous draft coverage for this year, you have a Browns team that, again, had $100 million in dreams galore of what they could do with it in the offseason here, but the unprecedented amount of high draft picks, cap room, etc., that the Browns, for everything that they've gone through, the 1-31 of the last 2 years, have come into this with an unprecedented bounty. So they are obviously the biggest story of this draft. You've got the quarterbacks toward the top of the draft, the chance that you could have more of them going in a row at the top of the draft than we've seen in quite some time. Not necessarily indicative of one of the all-time great classes like 83, but just in terms of teams having needs in those spots and or trading up like the Jets did. So as you look at it, again, whether it be wanting to talk about either of those stories or anything else, what is what really kind of grabs you from a macro level for this year's draft?
Well, I think the first five picks in the draft is really going to set a bunch of dominoes rolling in terms of how the rest of that first round plays out. Like, who's able to move up or who wants to move down? I think that first five picks is really going to dictate how the whole draft, the rest of that first round especially, plays out. I think it's interesting the Browns basically get to control the first and the second round. Both Thursday night and Friday night kicking it off. I mean, what they do will have that domino effect. And obviously, they're, you know, from Brown's perspective, you know, they're going to be looking at quarterback at number one. I know, you know, weird flat earth fan, that's the Browns fans that want, you know, a non-quarterback at one. I can't even imagine in my mind what they're thinking after all these years of not having a quarterback. I hear people call up national radio shows and say, the Browns have to take, you know, Chubb or Barkley or, you know, whoever, but not a quarterback. It's like, are you kidding me? Now, granted, there is not a quarterback in this draft that is the Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck, you know, John Elway sort of surefire thing. You know, each one of these guys being talked about at the top of the draft, and I'll say five of them, I'll include Lamar Jackson, they all have their flaws, they all have their warts, they all have their question marks, and some are bigger than others. And no, Baker Mayfield, that's not a height joke. it's, you know, so the
Browns are going to do their research, they're going to make their pick, and then the dominoes will start falling. And depending on what they do, I think will directly impact, for example, what the Giants do. So if the Browns take Allen, I think that the Giants will take Donald. If Donald is off the board at one, I think the Giants will, they will look at their board and they'll weigh the idea of a trade versus, what the grade they have on, say, Quentin Nelson or Bradley Chubb. And then that will, the Jets are going quarterback, and then it comes back to the Browns. What do they do? Who's left on the board? If Chubb's on the board, my feeling is that Dorsey will take Chubb. Pass rush, defensive end is the second most valuable position on the team. You can't have it to depth. You can't have a good enough defense. Greg Williams wants an attacking defense. Chubb seems to fit that exactly in terms of what they're going to try to do in the forthcoming seasons. And so he seems like a no-brainer there. And I say that, I don't know that Dorsey's reaction will be to move down. I think a lot of people are banking on the Browns to just sort of trade out of four with Buffalo and take that 12 and 22 pick and, move down. But the only reason that makes any sense is if you're doing that to grab a tackle later in the first round. And I got to tell you, when I look at all the tackles in this draft, you talk about the question marks at quarterback, the tackles are even worse. I don't have anybody with a first-round grade at tackle. I think McGlinchey's a fraud. I think he's a right tackle at best in this league, and I think he benefited directly from playing next to a future Hall of Famer in Quentin Nelson. And so I think McGlinchey will get exposed if somebody's counting on him to be their left tackle of the future. Hint, hint, John Dorsey, let's not make that mistake. Again, I think the Browns, what they do, it's going to create this domino effect. My guess is they stay put at 1-4. Somebody even suggested they could trade out of both, which would be the curveball nobody sees coming. But what they do will affect the dominoes, and then again, we play that Friday night going into the second round, controlling those first two of those first three picks. I think that's going to be the fun thing to watch in this draft.
Exactly, and trading out of 1-4 would be the most Browns thing in the history of the Browns, I think, being there in that spot. I agree with you on Chubb at 4, and I say that from the point of view of being a pessimist in terms of my mock draft. I'd rather, of course, see them take Saquon Barkley. My guess is they wave as he passes them by on the draft board and take Chubb. That's just my guess. So, Jason, as you're looking at the draft, dominant overall stories in your mind.
Yeah, quarterback's clearly going to be the thing that drives this until at least come off the board. I have a feeling that we're all probably relatively united on who this should be at one. And then, the big story, as it's been in this whole process, is how Cleveland literally is going to dictate everything else, at least in the early going. I know that they've been, quote, open for business this entire time. I don't think they've actually ever been open for business at one. The only way that happens is if somebody's dumb enough to get to the draft. I'm sure if, Buffalo said, here, take every pick we have in the first three rounds, they'd probably consider it. But that'd be ridiculous. So, not going to happen. I don't think they trade out of one no matter what. I think they take quarterback at one no matter what, despite what some of the dark corners of the fandom want to think. And then this is where we start to either differ a little bit or work on reality versus what we want. The fact of the matter is, I made no bones about wanting Donald and Baldwin out there, which I have to do it. I get the sub thing, but the thing that bothers me with that, and maybe I'm barking up a very, very minority mentality tree here. What happens when Jamie Collins, Joe Shuffler, Miles Garrett, Bradley Chubb, and arguably the two corners they're probably going to draft are all looking at free agency inside of the same 24-month period?
Ooh, hadn't thought of that.
I think there's a reason teams don't get to elite wide receivers and elite corners. I think it creates a nightmare that we don't want to invite right now. Now, again,
most people are going to say,
don't worry about that now. You get the guy now.
Well, this is Cleveland, though. So let's try to consider all factors.
So putting that aside, my thing is quite simply this.
Saquon Barkley plus Carlos Hyde plus Duke Johnson plus Miles Garrett and Emmanuel Ogba, in my estimation, is a better overall thing than Hyde, Garrett, Ogba, and Chubb.
So, to me, in an overall, just really basic perspective, I think, to me, it just seems more important in a selfish way that they find a way to get Barkley. Now, I think Barkley will be there at four, just like I think Miles Garrett will be there at four, meaning like most of us. I think that maybe the offer for two is going to be too much for the Giants to say no to. So I think we're going to see quarterback go 1, 2, 3. And then from there, Cleveland steps up, and they have literally their pick of the litter of every non-quarterback in draft. And for me, I'm not even trying to get into whether or not Barkley is Zeke or is Barkley early or whatever. I just look at it and say, put that guy, what he can do, better than everyone on the planet. He is as close to the perfect prospect in all ways we've seen maybe ever. With a team that not as bad as the quarterback, but has not had that dominant running offense that at least I can remember seeing as an adult. I'm 38 years old. The last time there was a good running game, I was still in elementary school.
Yeah.
So while the quarterback is a thing we absolutely have to face as a 6-1, to me, I think Chubb is a luxury pick, and I get why Greg Williams would want him. I get why Dorsey would want him. I just think, why invite that trouble if you don't have to? Especially when you can get something else that is so good it's going to keep defensive coordinators up at night, and you can literally go into games. So this is what we're going to do, and I dare you to stop it.
I 100% agree with that. I agree totally, Jason, with that, personally.
Yeah, once we're out of the top five, have a real fun again. Things do happen. And I'll agree with Chris on the tackles. I'm not shooting the fat so much on the glitchy that I've unleashed him as a fraud, but I'm willing to accept that idea. But these two, those out there that want to say, you get your quarterback, you do it over the FC, the best tackle in the draft. Well, the best tackle in the draft might not even beat out our right tackle. So what's the point? I like Colton Miller. But what I'm more intrigued with, there are two names, and we can get to them later if you want to, but there are two names that probably go off on day three that are absolutely projects, and I would absolutely want them to take a flyer on. But, yeah, tackle's a dicey situation. It's not the draft to get your next Joe Thomas. I'm not planning flags for that one. But that'll be an intriguing thing because some people, especially in a certain fandom, seem to think you got to take tackle per year. And this is one of those years you really need to not think that way.
Totally agree. By the way, why don't you throw them out? Who are the guys you like as tackle prospects in the later rounds?
Desmond Harrison, who is, I believe he's 6'6", but he's only 305, 310 pounds,
mm-hmm.
from West Georgia. My memory serves, he started out, I want to say it was Auburn, and he basically moves like a tight end if he's a linebacker. But he's so big. He's got the throws to build up on. And he'll just end up being, he's just physically too gifted not to find a place for him on the team. And if it's tackle and you can make him into a left tackle, then that's incredible. The other guy, which is more sort of a media circus idea, and I'm trying to find his name, so I'll butcher it. It's absolutely a thinking outside of the box type situation. He is the Australian rugby player who has been working out with teams. He's 6'9", 360 pounds, and runs like a legitimate running back. His name is Jordan Mailata, if I'm getting that right.
Right.
What's that? But another guy that just physically, you should not be able to hold that kind of frame. And he's been able to do it in a different sport where his agility could really help with the size if, and this is a mouthful, if he can learn to play that position. And playing rugby is a lot different than playing offensive tackle in American football. But these are guys you can take in round 5 and try to develop
how good your coaches are. And, you know, if they work, great. If they don't, minimal risk taken. But if you're going to take a tackle in this draft, I think you got to think outside the box. You got to hope that Colton Miller falls to the second, or you just be okay with a guy that protects you to your right tackle, maybe, and hope for the best. So I'd love for them to get a little bit more creative and say, no, we're not going to reach on some guy that you think is good because he happens to be the best tackle in this draft, which, as we measure up to other drafts, is the worst seen in recent memory. That does not translate to me, but if you do want to take a low risk, high reward kind of a situation, I'm all for that.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that. And one of the things I want to do here, you guys have put me in mind of this, is another feature from our draft guide. I'm going to see what you guys think about this. Strength of positions in the draft. And this is a part of the guide that I always handle personally, so I'll see what you guys think of my grades here. Everything goes from horrible up to great. So I'll start with you on this, Chris. I do not have any positions graded as either horrible or very poor. For poor, I have offensive tackle, average, none. So this shows you that I think there's good depth at most other positions in the draft. The good positions to me, tight end, center, defensive tackle, defensive end, cornerback, and safety. Very good. Quarterback, running back, wide receiver, offensive linebacker, inside linebacker, and great offensive guard. I'll start with you, Chris.
I completely agree with that entire assessment.
Wow.
The grade you put on all of those. That's exactly how I would have done it. The tackles are poor. At best, you're projecting. I have Colton. I have him as my highest rated, and that's a huge projection because he's got a lot of work that needs to be done. He really does have Patriot written all over him, I think, in terms of how they might be able to mold him. And then, of course, your interior guards and your centers. I think this is a great class for those positions. You know, and of course, the Browns, of course, invested a ton of money in a bunch of these guys in the last couple of years. And so I don't really see them drafting somebody in the first four rounds at those positions. But there's a lot of depth. I think the kid out of Arkansas, the center out of Arkansas, he's really rising up people's boards, and I think he's probably going to end up being a second-round pick versus, I think, when this process started, a lot of people had him sort of, you know, fifth, sixth round. So it just goes to show you how much movement there is in this. Your defensive ends, your tackles, I mean, you've got some great ones. I mean, I know, Rick, you probably disagree with this. I mean, Maurice Hurst, to me, is he's a three-down tackle that can rush the passer. He reminds me a lot of Warren Sapp. I think he's going to go at the back end of the first round. I guess he could fall into the top of the second, but I still see him somewhere in the 20s going. So there's a lot of great players to be had in that position. And then secondary-wise, I mean, starting with Derwin James, starting with Mika Fitzpatrick, the potential safeties are really solid. I'm a big fan of Derwin James. I think that's a player of four you could see the Browns grabbing if for some reason the Giants stay put and take Chubb. He seems like a Dorsey type of player, very versatile, can play all over the field, really. So this is a really good draft overall, unless you're looking for a tackle.
I would agree with that, and I think you probably said a lot there that Jason would agree with as well. And, I don't necessarily disagree with you about Hurst. The only thing that comes up with him is obviously the health issues that were uncovered at the combine here. Teams may be a little bit squeamish about that. I think there was some heart stuff. But that won't necessarily preclude him from going in the first round, but it may give teams something to think about in that regard. Jason, your thoughts on the position by position, and if you disagree with any of the position grades?
I don't disagree with any of them. The one little caveat I throw in there, though, and this is just what happens when you look at the whole picture, five-plus rounds. But when you look at the bulk of picks that will be made, I agree with everything you said, like Chris. The one little warning I would put on that is just because we believe that quarterback is relatively deep, running back is relatively deep,
not at the high level it was on 2 years ago. And that you're going to see a lot with offensive components, not as much on tackles. That does mean that you can sit back and wait until the fifth round
right.
to address these things. I do agree with the overall sentiment. However, as I'm going through looking at some of these player rankings breakdowns, the bottom falls out after a point of all systems. And I really do think we're going to find that the rounds 1 through 4.5, 1 through 5, are going to be great. You're going to find players that were there that you didn't think were important. And then after that, I think the 6 and 7 rounds can be pretty pedestrian. Now, that being said, depending on which way you want to go, yeah, you could get a legitimate starting running back as late as the 3rd round. You could get a guy that you could sit behind an established starter at quarterback who maybe isn't ready right now, but who absolutely will into a starter at some point. Chris mentioned Colton Miller at the Patriots. I don't know anybody on the planet that doesn't look at something like a Kyle Oletta, who they could get second, maybe 3rd round, who just feels like the quintessential Patriot type pick. And 5 years from now, we'll be talking about him like he's the next whatever. The divisional grouping rankings, absolutely have no issue with whatsoever. I think the quarterbacks are better than most people think they are, just because everyone's going to do a year-to-year comparison. I actually think that the top quarterback in this draft is probably the top quarterback to see in the last 3 drafts, but I don't want to start a fight or anything. My big overall thing is, just for this team, doesn't mean you can go get some bump in the 7th round. Be smart about it. He's value appropriately. He could really come out of this thing with a heck of a spread of picks, if they're made right, which those of us who are always
thinking about. Well, exactly, and I'm going to start there, and I'm going to throw this one first to you, Jason, because I'm going to invoke you a little bit here towards the end of what I've got. I teased this a little bit. My thought about the Browns and my fears about some of the things that I'm seeing, and I had said to you guys off air, to me, John Dorsey with this cutesy poo crap with the media is sort of looking like your average Instagram, fame whore right about now with, the little nuggets out there to the media. Again, I'm old school. I'd rather see a GM just keep his head down and not be, worried about spending hours of the day feeding the beast with this kind of crap. The one thing is the exception to the rule is, and I mentioned this before about him going to the Trump handbook, potentially, if he's trying to go to the madman theory, like with North Korea, of we might take a quarterback at 1 and 4, if that is successful in getting somebody to trade up to the 4th pick, and again, all things being equal, I'd rather see Saquon Barkley go there, but if Barkley's off the board, I'm fine with a mild trade back, 5 to 8 spots. If he's successful in getting anybody to believe he might be stupid enough to take quarterbacks at 1 and 4, and that helps grease a deal, okay, that would be the exception to my rule. But as far as my theory on the Browns, neither of you guys, I don't believe. I know you didn't, Jason. Chris, you didn't watch Mad Men, did you? Or am I wrong?
No.
Okay. So I'm going to have to explain this. I'm going to have to set this up. Jason, I know you tapped out early in season 1. I told you if you made it to the Nixon and Kennedy episode that you'd love it, but I understand. It's a slow show. It was too slow for you. That's fine. That's how a lot of people felt about it. But Joan Holloway, the buxom lead secretary in the office there was an episode in season 5 where this very disgusting individual from Jaguar makes the deal where the indecent proposal deal to the partners. We'll give you our business if I get to have one night with Joan. And the partners vote to put it to her to accept or to decline. And she accepts it because she gets to become a partner in the firm if she goes through it. So she does this, and she hates it afterwards, but hey, at least she's got a partnership. I see that as directly analogous to the 0-16 season. We, like Joan Holloway, are doing the shower of shame right about now. And if Josh Allen is the pick, then we're getting the proverbial box of kitty litter, Jason, which you once referred to Derek Anderson as, justifiably so. And again, that's what we would be getting for our night of shame versus Sam Darnold, That's the partnership at Sterling Draper, baby. That's what we got to look forward to if we pick Sam Darnold at one. I say that as Browns fans. So to me, it's that stark of a differential. You've already suffered through this. The 0-16 season equals the night with Herb from Jaguar. What do we do now that we're on the other end? And I think it's as stark as that, Jason.
Wow, that is a lot, Doug. That's a lot, Scott. That entire time, all I'm thinking is, Christina has a dance. That's a whole other conversation.
I haven't seen the show, and I'm just thinking that's a terrible analogy. And it was a lot of setup to get to not much payoff.
We disagree.
I've seen enough of the show that I get it. but my reaction to it is to be in agreement on some level. Maybe I'm a little bit more inching off the edge of the cliff, but I don't buy Josh Allen. I'm sorry. At the end of the day, if you can throw it a mile from your knee but can't hit anybody in stride, has no intermediate touch, I don't care that his receivers were I'm trying to keep this PG rated, were really bad, let's say. I get all of that. To me, he's Jamarcus Russell all over again.
Yes.
He can throw it far, but who cares? If we have time, I would really like to get into something that all three of us, I would almost put money on, watched intently. And that is that bowl game against Ohio State with Sam Darnold, which a lot of local fans like to throw out there as being negative. And I said, oh my goodness, that was such a monster for Sam Darnold, because he literally threw the kitchen sink at him in every single play. And he did the thing that no Cleveland Brown quarterback that I can remember since Kozar, and maybe that's being generous, can do. And that is when everything falls apart, does he make positive plays? And in that Ohio State game, he was phenomenal in that. And my thing is, take Josh Allen. Put Josh Allen on USC so at least he has DeAndre Burnett and the other kid who's a legacy, his name escapes me at the moment. At least give him some receivers that are at least scholarship worthy. But guess what? Josh Allen probably throws 6 or 7 interceptions. He probably throws for about 25%, and it is the most deplorably bad thing we've ever seen. So if Josh Allen, if there's a good thing about Josh Allen, I'm not going to say that I'm going to go full-on boycott like I did with, Hungry.
Oh, yeah, okay.
There you go.
Okay.
I actually went, I went full boycott. I said, I want to steal my team, but I will not pay for anything, and I will not watch them until they get rid of him. It won't be that bad. I'll at least hope that someone knows something that I don't, but I will be very depressed if they go for Josh Allen, because I think it's pulling the trigger on Jamarcus Russell again. That being said, I've got to assume that we're all Sam Darnold people on some level. I like the fact that he just checks all the boxes. Is he Andrew Luck or Peyton Manning? Maybe not. But I do think that he's the best option that they could have had during this time when they chose not to take quarterbacks, and that would include Deshaun Watson and Wentz and some of these other guys that the fans won't let out of their crawl. So if it's Josh Allen, I'm going to be really upset. And if it's anybody else, I can at least be convinced that there's something there.
Well, I'll tell you what, a couple of the things, and I'll get to you in a second here, Chris, but I agree with you, Jason. The more people brandish the USC-Ohio State game, the bowl game, as a weapon, the less they know about football. It was a mixed bag. There was a lot not to like in that performance. There were definitely some gleams in there, as Marty Schottenheimer would say. So I definitely agree with that. I think Darnold's got a high floor as well as a high ceiling. People talk more about the high floor, but I think the ceiling is pretty incredible as well, potentially. I am all in for him. What I want to know, Chris, generally speaking, and in addition to this, take it wherever else you want to take it, but where am I wrong in my We Are Joan Holloway comparison?
Well, yeah, I don't really know the episode and the character, so I can't really comment on that. I think what we are is the Browns are the fans are a hopeful group, and I think that if the Browns select Josh Allen, they will be hoping that some way, somehow, these coaches can find a way to take the positive. confidence that this young man has, because he does have some. I mean, it's not like he's just, you know, garbage or something. I don't have a first round grade on him, because when I looked at his performances in college, you know, there was literally not one game that he dominated. Whether they won or they lost, like, he took control of the game by himself and put that team on his shoulders. And every great quarterback at some point does that. There literally was nothing to point to say, wow, look what Josh Allen did this week. Can you believe it? Now, you see glimpses of the physical skills. They're there. But we had that last year with DeJohn Kaiser, where you saw flashes of where you would go, wow, I can, for this one quarter in this game, like, he's looking like a really good NFL quarterback, and then he would go back to being DeJohn Kaiser. I've got Allen sort of graded the same way. I have his ceiling as basically, I mean, it's probably as Big Ben. It's probably Roethlisberger. If everything works out perfectly, physical specimen. Look, people talk about him not being accurate. His stats say he's not accurate, but it's actually really not his accuracy. It's his anticipation of where the ball needs to be before it needs to be there seems to be the biggest problem. And I don't see that as a coachable thing, that the brain, you know, to arm, to hand, to when to let it go, get through your progressions needs to be fast enough, and you need to understand where the ball needs to be before the receiver's even made his break. That's, you know, an inherent thing in the quarterback's brain, and that seems to be what he's lacking. So, you know, his ceiling is Big Ben. His floor is, you know, as Jason said, it's Jamarcus Russell without the purple. I mean, it's just, you know, it could be really, really bad. I liken Josh Allen to this. To use a golf analogy, you know, we see these guys that are on the, you know, the long drive tour, where these guys go out and they just hit the ball a ton.
Yeah.
And you think, wow, how come these guys aren't all on the PGA tour, really just crushing it? You know, just drive, and then the rest of the game is simple, right? Well, none of those guys are on the PGA tour because they can hit it a ton, and then they got nothing else. And that's what I worry about. The Browns are doing. They're going, man, look at this guy off the long drive tour. Let's get him over here to the Masters and put some money on it. He's gonna kill us, you know, down in Augusta. Oops, he's got no short game. Oops, he doesn't. You know, he's no good with his irons. So that's what I kind of look at Josh Allen, and I go, man, you are banking on one skill set, and then hoping the rest of it falls into place. To me, I agree with Jason. Highest floor, maybe not as high a ceiling as potentially Josh Allen, but if you average out floor and ceiling at Sam Darnold, he's probably the closest thing in terms of, you know, projecting out to be like a Brett Favre kind of guy. And the fact that he can make plays when a play breaks down, he can make throws even if his footwork is terrible. You know, he's scrambling in the pocket, and his footwork's all off, and he still swings at 20 yards, you know, on the dime to a receiver. That's just not coachable stuff. And in this draft, I think we're all hoping the Browns don't fall in love with all the coach intangibles, thinking I can turn Josh Allen into the next greatest thing. You know, go with the guy who's shown you more. It's more likely to pay off. And to that sense, to your analogy, that's what Browns fans are. We're hopeful, right? So when the Browns break our hearts and select Josh Allen, because that's probably what they're going to do, setting off Browns Twitter into an absolute frenzy of anger, and I'll be right there with them. You know, we're all then going to get through the draft and then begin to hope that maybe all our fears about Josh Allen aren't really true. You know, to Rick's point, we're all taking a nice long shower, and then we'll try to, you know, move forward with our lives, pretending that he's going to be the one. And if they pick him, I think it's going to be another laundry, you know, long list of Browns QB failures.
Yep, one more name for that jersey, no question about it, and
in terms of both Allen and Baker Mayfield, I'm going to put this to you guys here because I see this draft as being somewhat similar to ones in the past. It seems to me that the cutoff generally from first tier to second tier is usually about somewhere in the teens. As far as market value goes, I've got it about 13 deep right now, and then I think there's another tier that probably goes down to about 40 or 45, and that's where I'm looking at mock drafts of guys going in the late teens in some drafts. In some mock drafts, they're not going in the first round. But in no particular order, this is actually the order I have them going in my mock draft, but market value alone, this is how I see the players on the first tier being 13 deep. Darnold, Allen, Josh Rosen, Bradley Chubb, Saquon Barkley, Denzel Ward. You've got Derwin James, Quentin Nelson, Tremaine Edmonds, Roquan Smith, Vita Vey, Baker Mayfield, Minka Fitzpatrick. I'll start with you, Jason. Is there anybody that belongs on that list that's not on it or doesn't belong on it that I had on it?
This is where we get into a real subjective stretch.
Right, market value.
If we're looking at market value, the one name that just feels like it's absent, it could be one of these situations where we're trying to save 11 people into 10 spots, is Tremaine Edmonds. I think that he is being viewed as either an elite prototype 3-4 outside linebacker or a really rangy, aggressive, long middle linebacker to 4-3. Either way, I think if you're looking for a linebacker, people are salivating over him. Now, from our previous discussions, I would absolutely leapfrog him over Minka Fitzpatrick, and we can get into that. But the long and short of it is I'm not giving anybody a top 10 pick if they're a slot corner, and I don't give a darn if it's the reincarnation of Darrell Revis. And another Darrell Revis thing is on the Ward. I'm sorry, but just to me, I feel like the league is moved to a point where, as good as he is, he's still 5'10". And I don't know that we can still afford to take guys on the sticks foot, no matter how skilled they are, in the top 10 with the way the league is going right now. So there's a couple things I have to move there, but really, Tremaine Edmonds is the only one I'm really worried about fitting into it. The question is, who does he knock out? And that's a question for each individual, I guess.
Pretty much so, yeah. So those 13 guys constituting the top tier, Chris, anybody you agree or disagree with?
Well, I agree that I wouldn't pick Tremaine Edmonds. When I look at him, it just to me feels like, hi, I'm Barkevious Mingo Jr. I just don't feel like that he is a lot. He is so much projection right now, his value versus what we actually saw in college, and he's so young. He's still 19 years old. On the flip side, I like Roquan Smith. I'm a big fan of. I think he's exactly the kind of linebacker in this league where they have to cover. He's actually, I think people assume because of his light frame that he's not any good against the run. He was really good against the run at Georgia. I'm very high on him, and he is what Danny Shelton should have been. I know I argued at the time that Shelton was a two-down tackle. Certainly proved to be the case. Villa is definitely a three-down tackle, and I think someone's going to get a really good player there. I don't know if he was on your list because I was trying to follow it. Do you have Deron Payne Alabama? Did you have him listed in there?
He's just below the line on my list, yeah. So you didn't miss anything. He wasn't on it. You could make an argument for him, but I put him just below the line.
Yeah, I don't think you should make an argument for him.
Okay.
When you look at his whole season at Alabama, I think a lot of the hype on him is just based on that Georgia game. And that level of dominance, we just didn't see all season long out of him. Yes, he was amazing in that Georgia game. I don't think that's what you're going to get most of the time out of him. I think you need to look at his whole season as a whole, and I think when you do that, you don't walk away going, man, there's a top 12, top 15 pick. So I think some team is going to make a mistake and kind of reach there for them based on that Georgia game and, again, some projecting.
Excuse me.
Another guy that you didn't list him, but I know, probably a top 20 prospect for you, Josh Jackson out of Iowa.
Right.
He had an amazing season, probably like the highest graded season like ever for like a college cornerback. That just came out of nowhere. And then when I look at his combine numbers, you know, his speed, his three cone, all of it, it was like the grading of like if you based it on the combine, you'd put a fourth or fifth round grade on him. So I have some real worries about him at the next level. And wondering if this season was just a one season, like a one hit wonder kind of situation. And there's some guys that I really like that I think that the teams like the Browns need to focus in the second and third round, especially in the second round. Guys like Carlton Davis out of Auburn, if we're talking cornerback. I think he's a big physical guy who covers really well, can jam the line. He plays a defense that like Greg Williams likes to do. So look for a guy like him for someone like the Browns or someone that plays a type of defense to really focus on in the second round, or he might fall at the top of the third. But my guess is he's gone in the second round. I think he could end up being one of these steals in the draft.
There's going to be some good steals potentially in the second round, to be sure, with again, that level of talent in there. If it starts to get interchangeable, as I think I'm right, from about the teens down into about the 40s or so, then you have some very good opportunities at the top of the second round where the Browns are very fortunate to be. So I will start with you, Jason, bringing this thing full circle here. Anything else that we didn't get to that you consider noteworthy?
First I've got to just stop and thank Chris for giving me further Josh Allen ammunition. Because I'm done here, I'm going to go post everywhere I possibly can. Josh Allen equals Happy Gilmore. that's a whole other conversation. But Josh Jackson is highly productive. Led the FBS in interceptions, if I'm not mistaken. He's almost 6'2". He's a big frame guy. My understanding is that he would probably throw more in his own system. Blah 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 blah. But if you're looking for a productive, get in there and disrupt things kind of slot corner, he may fall to the second round. I'm telling you right now, I'm jumping on Josh Jackson in the second round to play slot corner or whatever, wherever you're going to make him fit, 1,000 times faster than taking Minka Fitzpatrick from top 10 to the same thing. So that's just one interesting thought there. The combine did kind of scare people off of him a little bit, so I do think he falls. I love the Carl Davis idea, and I can actually go into the third and fourth round and look at somebody who I think fits a similar kind of role, which would be nice for a team to be big corners. The Roquan Smith thing, one thing I've kind of narrowed this down with him, whether it's run, pass, whatever, I feel like watching Roquan Smith is like watching Mike Tyson punch. He hits. He aims to hit like 5 yards after the player. So,
right.
I have no issues with Roquan Smith. People say that he's not as big as you'd like him to be. I don't care. I think he's one of those guys absolutely deserves to be way up there. The one, I guess, area we didn't really talk about that's getting dicey as time moves on is wide receiver. Guys that were projected for first-round loss, three of them, to start this place around January, February. Now, I'm not even sure if those are the same names still in the first round. Now, I still think it's going to get great value all the way through to potential the fourth, but there's some other things to be seen there. But, yeah, just in general, look, this whole thing comes down to what happened to 1-5. 1-5 dictates everything else, and I agree that some guys are rising and falling, which is setting up this interesting dynamic where, depending on what your team needs, you could be eyeballing a guy who might be available, or you think he'll be available, or he could absolutely be the guy that someone reaches on because they think he's that good. So I think the Deron Payne's of the world are going to sort of, I think some people are going to get guys that they really are one thing or something else. And I think some people are going to get steals. So it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds, but absolutely make no mistake about it. Cleveland and the New York Giants are dictating this whole thing goes.
They're going to. A couple things about what you said there. You are absolutely right. Great fluidity at wide receiver. Calvin Ridley still seems to be the number one guy to go on a lot of boards, but again, there's a decent amount of fluidity, and wide receivers, any of these guys could really go from, you know, the mid to later teens all the way through to the beginning of the second round, and going to be pretty good value probably for the guys who are getting taken a little bit later. As for Happy Gilmore, to quote a movie that our show's greatest all-time guest Bob Barker was in, hopefully for whoever takes Josh Allen, and hopefully especially if it's the Browns from our point of view, there is a moment of, uh-oh, Happy learned to putt. I don't think that moment's ever going to come, but that's what the team that takes him is going to hope for. So, Chris, react to any of that and anything else you've got that we didn't get to.
Well, I just I thought now's a good time to bring my hot take, which will just offend the both of you. I know Jason's got the top of his top 200 and Saquon Barkley. I think he's Christian McCaffrey.
Wow.
I do not think he is this transcendent running back that's going to carry your franchise like everybody else thinks. I think he's a really nice player, the complimentary back and the two-back set. But he's not going to be the player that all you all think he's going to be. Don't get me wrong. I'm a big McCaffrey fan. I mean, when the Panthers took him, was it ninth? They took him overall. Mm-hmm. I thought that was great. I thought that was a great pick. But I don't think Barkley's worth a top five pick. I think he could be a great player, like the way I think McCaffrey can be a great player in terms of getting his hands on the ball and making some things happen. But 25 carries in a game, I don't see it. Barkley's a guy who, in college, he was a, you know, he did not carry the rock the way I want to see my starting tailback be able to carry the rock. He was a game breaker, you know. You got 9 carries for, you know, at a 2-yard average, and then you got the 100-yard carry. So I just think I don't have as high a ceiling on him as everybody else seems to have. So I guess that's my hot take, if you will. And just, I want to point out a couple guys I think that are out there that, you know, a little bit further down to Jason's point that probably need watching. When we talk about quarterbacks, you know, Mike White out of Western Kentucky, Logan Woodside out of Toledo. You know, Mike White probably in the third round, Woodside maybe in the fourth or fifth. I mean, these are guys that could be developed really nicely if ending up on the right team with the right situation. And then, you know, talking the strength of the interior line, Austin, a 4-year starter at guard at Nevada, really mature guy, really cerebral. He's already married. You know, started a whole bunch of games in Nevada. He's a guy I think could have a great 10-year Pro Bowl type career. So look for him, you know, somewhere in that late second, you know, probably third round, a guy that could be really great for a team that picks him up. You know, in terms of, you know, so if you're the Browns and you're looking to add depth, which you know Dorsey is, he might be the kind of guy that they, you know, they invest that last pick in at the bottom of the second.
Well, two things there about what you said. Number one, here's a joke that only Clevelanders are going to get. Mike White, I think we can say, certainly has benefited from some great blocking from Nate Gray in his life, hasn't he? I think that's certainly the case.
Oh, my.
So there's that. Yeah.
Yikes.
Google that one,
well,
kids.
Hopefully this Mike White is not off the farm alpaca.
Yeah. I was going to make an alpaca farm joke, too. But Google that one, kids. Also, counterpoint on Barkley, as you knew I would. He's built really nothing like McCaffrey. He's certainly much more solid, much more physically able as far as toting the rock. So does that not at all conflict with your theory?
No.
Okay. All right.
No, it doesn't. I'm looking. Some of this is analytics, and it's that. And looking at, you know, his performance in terms of Division I backs and some of his averages in terms of how he carried the ball, it really doesn't stand out in any way. He has some explosive big plays, absolutely. And I'm not saying he's not a first-round talent. Don't get me wrong. I'm not explaining that. But he is a top pick or this, you know, sort of, you know, transformative, like, you got to have this guy. He's the running back for 10 years. I'm not sold on that.
Very interesting. Well, there, as I always say, when somebody says something like that, there's a real clip and save take that I'm sure we'll be revisiting over a period of time. Before we wrap this up, something we've talked a little bit about, Jason, again, your new gridiron and hardwood project. not to be confused with the very popular Gridwood and Hard Iron project out there. You're certainly not gravy training off of them, but your new web project that you have, talk about it a little bit here, you know, philosophically, where you're looking to go with it, your thoughts behind it.
Well, I guess the genesis of it all was a little over 10 years in radio, and a lot of jobs seemed to start right around where we are now, right in that sort of beginning of summer era, which puts me firmly in baseball range. And then, you know, things would happen, and all of a sudden there's a shift, there's an organizational shift, or something happens that rips football and basketball from my clutches. So the idea was, you know, they say about writers, you write what you know. Let's do what we know. I know people who really know baseball, and baseball's just not my thing. So when baseball comes up, like it did last night with the no-no, I would bring people in, say, hey, we're going to talk to so-and-so who can really add in some perspective. But for me, the idea of Gridiron and Hardwood was to create a sports talk venue that really does focus primarily on basketball and football, NFL, NBA, and the drafts between both. So that's really what we focus on, off season and all. So believe it or not, when we get through those dog days of summer where it's baseball, 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 we will be talking something else. And that's just the idea where it came from, and from there we've tried to add a little fun into it, create a little bit of a, I don't want to call it a barbershop thing and invoke the fury of LeBron James, but it's a similar sort of idea where we're basically trying to get a bunch of people. Some have high-end radio or media credentials, some don't, and creating conversation that both brings in a real solid industry breakdown perspective versus the overall feeling of the fan, or at least that's how it's been going in the early days. And then meeting on a wide variety of FDH dignitaries and other such contacts that we've acquired over the years, bringing in a number of different people with a number of different backgrounds to give perspective on this. And, you know, just trying to have fun with it. We're not so far into it that we say, hey, no FCC, we're too crazy. But at the same time, we do want to adhere somewhat to sports media practices and give us something to perfect on, but at the same time.
Absolutely, Jason. And I know per discussions you and I have had, you use the word primarily there advisedly, as there will be a little sliver of something else from here and there. And I know you've talked to me about the wonderful world of the pro graps and some other things like that. So folks will be able to get a little bit of some of this other kind of stuff from time to time as well. I don't know if it'll be an other section or what you're going to call it, but folks can get that as well, I know.
Absolutely, yeah. There's sometimes there's just a demand for that, you know, and some conversations came up leading up to WrestleMania. So, hey, you know, I got guys, right? So, like, my wrestling experience is touch and go, based on what time of year we're looking at, what time of the wrestling era we're talking about. So that's a possibility. There's also a possibility of entertaining almost a sort of 60 minutes, real sports of Brian Gumbel type situation where we take one topic that isn't really in our wheelhouse and really devote a great deal of time to it and breaking that down in sort of sports magazine kind of way.
That's right.
Yeah, there's going to be plenty of opportunities highlight things that aren't necessarily in our wheelhouse and try to maximize the fun that we do have with the stuff that is.
Exactly. Look forward to co-promoting that with the FDH Lounge under the banner of the 21st Century Media Alliance. Always great to have another great entity in there. And speaking of the FDH Lounge, it is always a red letter day in America. Should be a federal holiday, if you ask me, whenever you get three FDH Lounge original dignitaries together. Always great to do, as we do for the NFL draft, and I certainly hope we can get the three of us together to break it down afterwards. Chris Galloway, want to thank you as always, my man, for being here.
Thank you. Gentlemen, I enjoyed it, and I look forward to the post-draft wrap-up.
That's going to be awesome, as always. And Jason Jones, our FDH senior editor. Jason, thank you very much, as always. Your analysis really powering our draft guide this year, as always. And thanks for being here today.
No problem, buddy. Anytime.
All righty. Thank you guys for being a part of this. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 980.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.